Like to call to order the Community and Regional Affairs Committee. The time is 8:05, February 14th. Happy Valentine's Day. Today we have two bills up, HB 264, Municipal Property Tax Deferment, as well as HB 312, Natural Gas Conversion Program Fund. And here to present HB 264 is Christopher Clark of my office.
Hey, good morning, and thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning, members of the committee. And I think we have online Steve Van Zandt, the man with the encyclopedic memory of everything related to property tax assessments. But good morning. House Bill 264 before you, at least I hope it's before you in its entirety. When I handed out packets yesterday, I noticed that page 2 was missing. I'm seeing that the committee members have used their reliable iPads, so with luck you have page 2 as well. My apologies for that. Anyway, the purpose of House Bill 264 is to give municipalities the option to provide an incentive to develop land for housing by deferring for up to 5 years a property tax increase associated with subdividing a piece of property into three or more parcels. In a bit, I'll explain why three or more was chosen as the, or were chosen as the term of art here. The measure would give municipalities the flexibility to defer increases in property taxes on subdivided parcels until a lot is sold, or the way the bill currently reads, the city grants, or a city grants, a building permit for that piece of property. It would allow a local government to adopt an optional deferral for all or a portion of subdivided property. It would let a municipality decide the terms of paying the tax deferral and when those payments would be due. The intent was to make this bill as flexible to the cities as possible so that they can figure out the best way to implement it. Supporters of this measure say it would remove a disincentive for developing privately owned property by holding taxes at the undeveloped land value until improvements occur that lead to a parcel's being developed and sold, thus becoming more valuable and capable of generating more revenues for local governments that choose to exercise this option. The purpose is simply to encourage land development, especially for more housing, and to let local governments decide whether a property tax deferral will benefit them. If you just briefly look at the bill, I'd first like to give a kudo to the drafter, Alpheus Bullard, because you've seen a lot of municipal property tax exemptions in your time, come before your committee and on the floor. I like the way he drafted this. This is pretty clear. It states in the first newly created section this tax deferral, and it spells out when it would expire. You can have it last up to 5 years, or if the property is sold or there's a building permit for it. Later we will talk about, if we get another chance to have this bill up in committee again, a potential amendment addressing the issue of building permits. Apparently not all boroughs across the state issue building permits, so we're coming up with language to address that potential potential trigger so that we don't give them an indefinite tax deferral. And then we put in here, as you can see, the bill has an effective date starting with the new fiscal year, July 1st. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Thank you. Before I want to go on, I forgot to acknowledge the presence of Representative Osterman, Foster, Gardner, and myself, Munoz. Thank you for the presence. Are there questions for Christopher? Yes, Representative Foster.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So is this primarily focused for residential versus commercial, or is it either, or?
Thank you, Representative Foster, through the chair. It is actually could be for commercial or residential. Our intent when we drafted this bill was to focus on the residential. I should also acknowledge that sitting behind me are the people who brought the idea to us, or an idea that became this bill. And these are developers in general, or people who are involved in housing development, who see this as a vital tool to help get development happening sooner, and mostly with a focus on the residential side of the equation.
Another question?
Sure.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In terms of tracking, building isn't sold for 30 years, and I'm just curious, have you thought about what the mechanism would be to ensure that, you know, the first 5 years of are deferred, correct, the taxes, so then you don't sell the building for 30 years, and then you go back to pay on that, and And then there's the time value of money, all those things. I don't know if those have been taken into account at all.
Through the chair, Representative Foster, in some ways, yes, in some ways, no. In some ways, we're leaving it to the municipalities to figure out what would work best for them, how to defer it and how to implement it. And we're thinking that they may need that latitude. And in discussing this proposal, my understanding at least, that with the local government here, that they seem to be receptive to the idea of providing that kind of flexibility.
Okay. Thank you.
Additional questions? Representative Gardner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm sort of curious about that distinction between residential and commercial, because reading the backup documentation, it's about the need, and the justification is about the, you know, the tight housing market and the need to make it easier, but there's nothing about the need in terms of commercial.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm wondering if the city of Juneau maybe is going to comment on that or other communities.
Sure. I think commercial, too, is a broad application, meaning commercial rentals, small homes that could be rented, subdivisions that would encourage multiple use, mixed-use developments.
Thank you.
Thanks. Okay. All right. Are we ready for public testimony? Yes. Okay. All right. Alan Wilson with the Affordable Housing Commission of Juneau is here to testify. Alan, please, for the record, restate your name and affiliation and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Alan Wilson. I'm a local builder in Juneau, and I currently am the sitting chairperson for the Juneau Affordable Housing Commission. The commission was established in 2007. As a means to address the tight housing situation in Juneau. The assembly set us up for a three-year period. At the end of that period, we were set up as to be an ongoing commission. Believe me, I thought we'd solve this problem in the first year and be done. It's much more complex and takes a lot more, there's a lot more pieces to the puzzle than I ever dreamt. The commission over the last 5 years has looked at numerous things. We've looked at, we've worked on the comp plan. We've addressed zoning, increased densities. We've created some overlay densities so you get a bonus if you're within a certain area of the community. We've given discounts on gravel for filling sites, all kinds of little programs that we've been able to get in place. So we've had a lot of success, but as I said earlier, there's literally hundreds of pieces to the puzzle, and we've chipped away at 50 of them, maybe. One of the things that we've looked at was to get in, you know, how do you get the private sector motivated? And, you know, it's been pointed out to us time and time again that you have land cost, you have the cost to develop that land, and then you build a house on it. And that is the sales price of your house. Throw a little profit in there somewhere along the line, hopefully, and that's the cost of a house. Well, the commission established in 2010, we did quite the housing analysis of Juneau, and this is on the web if anyone wants to go more in depth, but we came up with the need of about 343 housing units in Juneau to get us to roughly a 5% vacancy number. That breaks down to 205 single families and 138 multi-units. Again, back to land costs. How do we get the private sector to develop these properties? There's obviously a need. You go to the bank and you say, hey, I got a document produced by a quasi-government agency saying we need 205 single-family dwellings. So great. We also designated a price of about $250,000 as the entry-level value of a home. It just can't be done. It's very difficult to be done. So some of the things we've looked at deal with, like I said, zoning issues and some free gravel, which is a small component. But when you get to the cost of developing land, and that's kind of the gist of this whole bill, is that if you can defer those costs from the front of the project to the back of the project, it makes a pretty substantial difference in giving the municipalities flexibility with zoning tools such as this. These types of efforts or tools are used in lots of places across the country, and they're used in different mechanisms. Sometimes a municipality will say, we need housing in a certain segment of a community so they can put these types of incentives in place for, say, it's Juneau's a hard community, but say we're going to do the Valley area as an example. They could declare that any development in this area would qualify for these exemptions or deferrals. So it's a pretty viable tool. This is the one item that in the 5 years that we've been working at the commission on different tools that is private sector based. You know, we've got a trust fund out there to try to motivate cheap money for developers. The nonprofit developers are good at taking advantage of cheap money. The private sector is not so experienced and motivated at those tools. So this would be a tool in the right direction. We think that it's a major step in our piece of the puzzle is getting affordable housing in Juneau, or actually more housing is better than no housing. So whatever we could get would be good. With that, entertain any questions, comments?
Thank you, Alan. And please let the record show that we've been joined by Representative Cisna. Are there questions for Alan? Yes, Representative Osterman.
Yeah, thank you. Your comment in reference to the ability of a community to split it into service districts, for example, and only allow this deferral, is that it's not specifically spoken to in the bill, so is it presumed that they can just do it?
To the chair, Representative Osterman, it is in discussing at the local level these sorts of concepts with our planning departments and in the revenue department. That subject came up, and they thought there's enough flexibility within the bill. It's vague enough that they can work within this model to accomplish just that. They even went to the next step saying they could probably work it so that they could give incentives just to a certain part of the housing segment. So you could say multifamily or single family. You could even go pretty in-depth and pretty targeted.
Thank you. Ellen, could you give an example of a real example of, say, a development that is looking to subdivide a parcel into 6 or 10 lots, and what the carrying cost with additional taxation would be right after development before those lots are developed? Just kind of a, you know, ballpark estimate, so the committee has an idea of what we're talking about.
There's other members behind me here that actually have projects in the works. I think
okay.
would be better
well,
to answer that
helpful.
Question.
Okay, great. All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Oh, did you, Representative Cisna?
Well, thank you very much, Madam Chair, and I guess this is a question I'm not quite sure who it's to, but I can really see exactly, I can't see exactly, actually the truth is I don't really see it, and you obviously have been working very difficult on a very difficult problem that's a mathematical problem, and it's trying to deal with a market that exists here. And I can imagine other places in Alaska, small towns, where it would. But and that's this committee is really looking at all of Alaska. Mm-hmm. And then there's other parts of Alaska where it wouldn't work at all, mm-hmm. is what I would guess. And I don't know if you can estimate just how many communities you think this actually might work into across the state.
Madam Chair, since we've been, this bill's been introduced, we've had a lot of conversations with people across the state. The Alaska State Home Builders met about a month ago, and I introduced this to their legislative committee. And I was kind of surprised at how many of those members, Anchorage Bull, Matt Valley members, came to the table and said, hey, this might be a tool for us, coincidentally commercial. Was kind of their concern out in the valley, getting some more commercial land. I think that there's probably a bigger need because it's not even an option that's on the table right now. And so when the commission started looking at options, we didn't realize it wasn't even an option to us. So we went down the road quite a ways, and then we realized, well, we can't do this. So it's a tool, I think, that exists in the lower 48 and is used quite often, but we tend to dismiss it because it's just not allowed. The big question, and Representative Munoz worked on this to quite a bit to make sure that wasn't going to be a revenue impact to municipalities. That was always a big concern. We view this as a more of an economic stimulus type of bill, more so than a potential negative. That's why there's time limits on it. That's why the building permit phase is in there.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Madam Chair. Further on this, Alaska is still in its infancy in some ways, and this is one of those ways where we're still trying to figure out how do we capture capital and have it work so that we're investing our money in Alaska, not having it taken out of the state, not having our communities poor because we haven't figured out how to do some of the things that are done outside. And there's other, I need to look at this a little harder, but at the same time, the way you're thinking, the math you're doing, the problems that you're facing, I hope you're writing this down and that you're keeping a log, because what I'm thinking is that the way you're thinking might actually be applied with other kinds of safeguards in place, other places in some of our areas that really haven't been developed at all, and that it's been federal projects that have built the housing and that kind of thing. So are you doing that? Are you keeping careful track of what you're doing?
You know, through that, through the chair, the Housing Commission has been, we have a nice, good staff, so we do keep good records. The I think our track record of the tools we were trying to get in place are out there and moving forward, and you know, we're the first community in the state to establish a housing trust fund. Mm-hmm. We think that's going to play a bigger role as time goes on. I know other communities in the state are moving in that direction. So the Housing Commission has been at the forefront of implementing new tools, because as you say, we are a relatively young state in a lot of ways, and these concepts, while they're new to us, are not always new elsewhere. So there's lots of experience to draw from.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Sisna. Excuse me, Alan, thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you.
Next online from Fairbanks, we have Daryl Brune. Daryl, are you online?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
Yes. Could you state your name and affiliation, please, and begin your testimony?
I will. Thank you. My name is Daryl Bourne. I represent the Interior Alaska Builders Association. I am a 30-year Fairbanks building contractor, and I support House Bill 264. I am a partner in a 52-acre subdivision. It's on a paved road, 10 minutes drive from Fairbanks. It is located between the highway on the south and the Chena River on the north. All the roads and most of the power was complete 5 years ago. There are 18 river lots. We are not selling lots per se. I have a lot of people call and want to buy lots, but these are for my inventory. I want to build homes and sell package sales. In 2007, we subdivided 10 lots on a cross street that travels through the subdivision. Our intention was to build on these 10 lots and then subdivide 10 more. The reasoning was not to have to pay the higher tax on the individual divided lots. In the last 5 years, because of the downturn in the economy, we have only sold 3 houses in that subdivision. I'm still sitting on 6 lots that I pay the full price on the borough taxes. We have built other houses. It's not like we've been sitting around on people's own property. But there are 2 kinds of buyers. Most home buyers are on a fixed and limited income. They want an economical, nice home, but they aren't real particular where that is located. And then there are those that want to live on the Chena River, and they're real adamant about it. Even in a tight market, these folks have the money, and the extra cost is not a factor. In the last 5 years, I have missed 5 or 6 new home sales simply because I have not had a river lot available. I can't afford to subdivide those lots and pay the taxes on those. because if they did not sell for 8 or 10 years, it would cost too much. And as Alan was saying, it would be cost prohibitive. If our borough would adopt this amendment as proposed, we could move forward easily to provide more sellable home lot packages on the river. I have a short waiting list of buyers that have said, please notify me when these are ready. We want to move. If this passed, I'm sure that my partner and I would subdivide 8 or 10 more lots on the river and accommodate these people that are waiting. This would be a great economic boost for my business. It would bring more homes into the borough tax basis eventually. As it is, we aren't going anywhere. These lots are sitting there, the roads are in, the power is almost done, nothing's happening. So people with money would like to build on the river, and I would like to accommodate them. So please pass House Bill 264. Thank you.
Thank you, Darrell. Are there questions? Representative Gardner.
Thank you, Darrell, for your testimony. Do you know what the vacancy rate is in Fairbanks for residential, for housing?
I really don't have any idea.
Thank you.
Thank you, Darrell.
Thank you.
Okay, next, here in Juneau, we have Dave Hanna signed up to testify.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Dave Hanna. I live at 11495 Mendenhall Loop Road here in Juneau. My family's been in Alaska since the 1870s. We've been in Juneau since 1880. And we've mostly been businessmen of one business or another. So I'm obviously pretty pro-development. I'm here to speak in favor of this bill. I'd like to give you a little background on what actually goes on when you try and bring a new subdivision online, because a lot of folks just aren't really familiar with the process. And it can be a pretty lengthy process. It's a pretty daunting proposition, especially in a town where land is short and land costs are high. And you have to go out and search out a piece of property. You usually end up paying a fair amount of money for that property. And then you look back and you're trying to figure out what you're going to do with this piece of property, and you realize the costs have just started. All of a sudden, you've got to go out. You generally have to have somebody do what they call a jurisdictional determination to find out how much of it is wetlands. You have to hire botanists to come out and help with that. You have to get the Corps of Engineers to approve that. In the meantime, you're hiring surveyors to come out and do a topographical survey of the property. Usually they have to reestablish the boundaries of the property because it's old mining boundaries that might not be accurate. The costs go on. Sometimes you have to pay for traffic studies to make sure the traffic you're going to induce upon the arterials is not too high. There's engineering involved if you're on a steep piece of ground, which in Juneau and other many communities in Southeast especially are on steep ground, and the list just goes on and on. It's not an overnight proposition. It often takes a year or two to get all your work done before you're ready to even apply for a permit to develop your subdivision. So in this time, you spend a fair amount of money, sometimes hundreds of thousands of dollars. That's pretty staggering. Well, you apply for this permit, and sometimes that doesn't happen right away. In some municipalities, they're very stringent about how your subdivision is developed, and there can be a lot of review. And if you have folks that live adjacent to these properties, they can bring up concerns, valid or not, that delay that process. So the time is going on. The clock is ticking. Well, the whole reason you were going to develop this property is because there was a demand in the market. There was a need for these lots. But time has gone by. So finally, you get your permit. You record your plat. Well, the minute you record your plat, your property taxes go up. You've already spent a lot of money. Now all of a sudden, and generally you've borrowed some of that money. So you have a cost for that money. All of a sudden you now have an additional cost. You have raised property taxes. Now when you actually build that street, your taxes go up again. And unfortunately, what frequently happens is exactly what that gentleman from Fairbanks just testified about. I had no idea he was going to do that. It was a wonderful thing to hear his story, although it broke my heart because it's happened so many times around here. his market went away. Now he's sitting on these lots. He not only is paying interest on money he might have borrowed, but he's paying increased taxes on lots he can't sell. And it's certainly a disincentive for him to create any more lots. I have no idea what his actual costs are, but I know for some people it has actually doubled their carrying costs in their subdivision. In your handout there, you'll see a little packet of a little example I did of a piece of property I'm intimately familiar with, so I think the numbers are reasonably accurate. You can jigger them around because it depends on how much interest you're paying on the money you borrowed or how much money the city may or may not raise your assessment on the lots, depending on how accurate their assessment is. Sometimes the first year their assessment will be a little lower, but the minute you sell one or two lots, they sell for more than they thought, so then they raise your assessments again, and lo and behold, all of a sudden you're paying $1,500 a year on every lot when you used to be only paying $3,000 or $4,000 a year on your entire parcel of land. It's a pretty staggering proposition. It's kind of interesting. I only saw one letter in opposition to this, and I noticed it came from the Municipal League, and they talked about the fact that a developer could just elect to wait on developing their property until the time came. And I think maybe reviewing what I was just talking about here, you can understand why that's really not an option for developers. If you wait until the market is there, by the time you bring your subdivision online, the market may very well be gone. So we really need some sort of additional incentive for developers to begin their process before the boom hits, before there's such a crying need for the lots that the prices escalate, the amount of available lots to build on shrinks so small that people are fighting over them. We need incentives so developers can maybe get started a little ahead of the curve, develop some lots, have them ready, and then when the need is there, the lots are there to serve them. There's been a lot of support for this. It's been addressed by many committees. I actually sat on the original affordable housing panel that started the commission that Alan sat on, and this was talked about back then. Mm-hmm. There's been letters in the Empire that address this crying need. Our Juneau Assembly actually passed a motion in favor of a resolution supporting this because they realized that this is a tool that would be valuable to them. There's a copy of that in your packet also. So I guess I just can't ask you enough to strongly consider approving this legislation and adding whatever modifications you can to it to make it even more palatable, because there is a need in many of the smaller communities in Alaska. Thank you.
Thank you, Dave. Are there questions? Representative Sisna.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Okay, I come from kind of the park and planning world, right? And so sometimes we buck horns or whatever that would be over development. But what I can see, and boy, I see the picture here of trying to figure out how financially you're going to pull this off in a way that keeps you alive and allows for the future to come. One of the things that happens in municipal government, and I've watched this up close in Anchorage, is that we have big developments going in and sometimes smaller and slowly growing without other kind of planning put in place, without a bigger picture, so that we many times wind up with houses kind of cramming one space without there being the kind of environment that you want to have around that. If you're talking riverfront property, you want to be able to have some sense of what it really was before all those houses went up. You want to have parks. You want to have some of those public spaces around your house to keep the value up. Do you see a way to integrate planning into this in a way that would be really supportive of people being able to make the amount of money so that they can not go broke trying to do it, but still have a really quality thing in the end?
Representative Sisna, through the chair, thank you for asking that question, because I actually meant to touch on that subject. That's exactly what this bill can help with, because what it would do is would allow municipalities broad flexibility in how they apply this. And in many municipalities down south, they will use tax incentives like this to encourage, for example, infill development or planned unit development, or if they build a bigger green space or park than what is required by code, they will put forth the tax incentive. So a bill that is as broad as this in allowing the municipalities to tailor it to suit their needs would do exactly that. It would give the municipalities another tool to have development occur in their community exactly the way they envision it.
Thank you.
Certainly.
Thank you. Thank you, Dave. Appreciate your testimony. Okay. Oh, did you have a question? I'm sorry. Representative Foster.
Sorry, Madam Chair. Just real quick, you had mentioned in your example you could potentially pay $1,500 per lot, whereas you may have been paying $3,000 or $4,000 for the entire piece of land. And in that example, how many lots might there be in something like that?
You have to pardon me. That was a letter that I did quite a while ago. That one was averaging 56 lots for that piece of property. That was an example I used for our local municipality when I was trying to give an example of how it would affect them tax-wise. And my apologies, Chair. I think that gives an excellent example of where bringing product online sooner actually turns this into, you know, a net revenue increase for the municipalities, because they'll be sitting there on a piece of raw land that maybe the developer's only paying $4,000 or $5,000 a year, or $2,000 or $3,000 a year, whatever it is. All of a sudden, 1 or 2 years ahead of schedule of what they would normally, before they would have normally leapt into the fray. There's several houses out there that every one of those houses is generating $4,000 or $5,000 a year in property taxes. So the whole idea behind this is the fact that it's not a negative cash flow for the municipalities. It's actually a stimulus for increased cash flow.
Thank you. And you had mentioned AML. I didn't know. Will they be testifying? Are they here today? Or
They were invited, but they're not here today. They certainly were aware of the meeting. But we can make sure that they're here at the next meeting.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you.
Okay. Online, we have Dave Owens, Legislative Chair with the Alaska Home Builders Association. Dave, are you still with us?
Yes, I am, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Please begin your testimony.
My name is David R. Owens. I live in Palmer, Alaska. I'm the Legislative Chair for the Alaska State Home Builders Association. I'm here today in support of House Bill 264. I feel that this is a great option that for municipalities, for developers, and boroughs to have in their toolbox if they want to use it. My view is that we need to stimulate this economy. We need to be as innovative as possible, and this would is a step in the right direction. And that's all I really have to say today. I think the other speakers have pretty much covered my thoughts, but thank you for letting me testify.
Thank you. Are there questions? No. No. Okay. Thank you very much, Dave. Next, here in Juneau, we have Fred Marino. Fred?
Good morning, Madam Chairperson and Chair members. My name is Fred Marino, 5165 Glacier Highway. I'm with DJG Development. I think one of the major aspects that we're overlooking is real estate is a commodity, and like any other commodity, it shouldn't be taxed until it's sold. So we've gone through the production process. We have something that's ready to be sold, and it shouldn't be taxed until it's sold. We don't do any different for the crabbing industry, the fishing industry, the oil industry. Fred Meyer's, if they have a pair of shoes on the display rack, you don't pay sales tax on it until you take it off the rack. So it's the same with the real estate industry. And it's universal. No matter where you are in Alaska, the implications would be the same. The development process would be assisted by this kind of action. So that's.
Other question? Yes, Representative.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just would point out that in Anchorage, at least, I don't know about other communities, there is an inventory tax that's payable annually.
Yeah, and how much is that? Is it 100% of value?
I don't know exactly what the rate is, and you have to reach a certain threshold, but I know that they'll tax you on your computers, your tables, your office, I mean, whatever right. You've got, your stationery in stock. It's really a pain.
Yeah, it is, but it isn't 100%. It isn't 100% on value, where these taxes are 100% on value, the real estate taxes. So what we're trying to do, and many of the people would be would consider an additional inducement like you were suggesting to come into areas in Alaska commercially or residentially and say, we're willing to do this, we're willing to put our money in. If we know for 5 years we have the opportunity to fluctuate with the economy and to build some housing without the consideration of additional taxes. And they are quite significant when you consider, as we were talking about, a $4,000 a year tax versus $100,000 a year tax on a piece of property. So I think too, the consideration is what would be fair, maybe more.
Okay. Any additional questions? Thank you, Fred, for your testimony. Next, here in Juneau, we have Mike Satry.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Appreciate you hearing HB 264 this morning. My name is Michael Satry. I'm a resident of Juneau. I'm a constituent of Representative Munoz. I wear many hats in this town, but one of them is I am chair of the Planning and Zoning Commission here in the city and borough of Juneau. We have not made any official we have not taken any official action on this ordinance yet, so I can't speak on behalf of the entire body, but I'm going to speak to some of my experiences as a member of that commission over the last 7 years. We in Juneau and in many other communities in Alaska have a need for affordable housing. I experienced that when I was lucky enough to move back here in 1999, and even though I worked in the mining industry and made good wages, I had a hard time finding a house to purchase, and I was lucky enough over the years to be able to purchase homes that supported my family. But folks that I managed or folks that I tried to hire to come work here in town had problems finding that. And my many years on the Planning Commission, whether it was developers or folks like Mr. Wilson on the Affordable Housing Commission, people representing various interests in town, have always raised affordable housing as one of the key issues in terms of retaining our, just as simple as retaining our kids in our region and having a viable place for them to live. Affordable housing means many things to many people. For me, it really means that we have a range of options in all segments of housing, whether that's single-room occupancies, group homes, multiplexes, single-family homes, the large houses out by the water that some of us only wish we could afford. When you have a range of options for all levels of or all segments of the population, then housing becomes affordable. People, as they start to make more money, they might be able to afford a single family home that opens up an apartment or condo. Somebody who might have been on assistance in the past is now making steps towards having a more viable career. They're able to move up that chain as well. As was mentioned earlier, we don't have those opportunities here in Juneau. I know there's other communities, at least in our region, that don't have those opportunities as well. We know that there's no single solution to the problem. I mean, there's many pieces. We need strong economic drivers. We need control of our energy costs. We need a variety of housing types available. We need multimodal development. These are all things that we've worked on, in my experience, on the Planning Commission over the years. And one of the things we identified that we needed in our toolbox was this ability to defer taxes on subdivided land. Of course, we quickly found out that wasn't a borough issue. That was a state issue. We're very glad that this bill is in front of you today. We know that developers bear that initial financial burden of developing property. Mr. Hanna and others have brought that up very clearly to you today. In my experience, sitting on the Planning Commission, I've seen examples where when housing markets were good, people rushed to subdivide land, And by the time they had gone through the entire platting process and had recorded that and they were ready to develop it, the market had changed. And now they were sitting on large amounts of lots being taxed on as if they were already developed. And they actually came back to the city and recombined those lots. They took those lots off of the market because they could not afford the financial tax burden. So it took them off the tax rolls. And right now that land still sits today, not available for slow phase development over time. So landowners become reluctant and subdivide their land, and this becomes a self-perpetuating problem. So HB 264 certainly addresses one small part of this problem. It puts control in the hands of the local boroughs. They can decide if this this fits their situation and lets them adapt to current market conditions. If there's rapid development in an area and a demand for, you know, an ever-increasing demand for borough services, then maybe they don't have this deferral. Maybe they need to move these lands onto their tax rolls as quickly as possible. But in a case like Juneau, where there's there might be stagnant demand for certain levels of the housing market, and that ends up blocking the development of a wide range of housing options, this deferral could work quite nicely to have a stock of housing before the next boom, and for us to be able to slowly develop certain lands and not put this incredible burden on the developer, and allow us to have our range of housing options. I know there are some people that may say this doesn't go far enough. They want to see a flat-out exemption to the property taxes. And you know that may be something that you work out as a committee going forward. But I think this deferral of this taxes is a very appropriate way to address this problem. I know that there's been some concerns raised in previous questions about industrial and commercial lands versus residential. And I... be careful if you look at amending this bill to try to make some sort of differentiation, because I know certainly in Juneau, I don't know about other municipalities, but some of our commercial lands also have options for residential development. So we don't want to unnecessarily preclude some of that by introducing certain amendments to this ordinance. In fact, sometimes commercial lands are a great opportunity for mixed-use development, where you have retail opportunities, say, at a ground level, and then you're able to put high-density apartments or condominiums on top, and you're able to put lots of residential units on a small piece of land, potentially. I mean, we just be sure that we're not... eliminating some of our housing opportunities on the commercial side. Industrial land generally doesn't have housing, so you might be able to deal with it there. The AML said this creates a special class of taxpayers, and I agree with Mr. Hanna. It really doesn't. This encourages development. These taxes will still get paid. They're just deferred for a certain amount of time to defer the risk on the developer of the land. So I urge you through your working committee to pass this out to the next committee referral and move this bill through the House this session. And I appreciate your time this morning.
Thank you, Mike. Are there questions? Representative Sisna.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this definitely is out of my league, but at the very same time, I'm thinking of this whole process of making sure we have lands ready to be developed. And we live in this absolutely superlative, incredible state, and all the communities, and I've been out there, so I've seen lots of places, and you don't find ugly places. It's an incredible, incredible state. Okay, you want land, and I can see the point behind this. I think the idea of being able to get homes or get buildings up as soon as possible by going through the paperwork, going through as many parts as are necessary so that it's ready when the market is ready, so that everything kind of comes together in the right way. And what I know I've seen, and I've watched it in Anchorage, right where I live, I moved in 1967, and Northern Lights Boulevard, Benson wasn't there yet, Northern Lights Boulevard was totally ready for development. It was ready for development for 30 years. And it was all cleared. It was, everything was straight. It was ready to put into a grid. It was, used to be wonderful little park-like areas, apparently, little fields with little streams and brush and very beautiful. And for all of those years, all of those people went through there. is there a way to do this and win and not have anybody lose? And in the process that you have been working in, is there a way to be able to get all of the permitting done and at least, obviously you're not going to be able to, there's some parts of this you can't do, but get it very close to being developed. And then when we have a person who actually does the, builds the units, that kind of thing, I'd love to know just how fast units and buildings can go up. At what point can you get the land ready for development, but keep the trees and keep, or at least keep a moderate amount so that you don't feel as if you're just looking at fields, so that you keep the beauty, you keep the natural stuff. And then what I've heard people who move into the houses where things for a long time have been ready, is there's not the beautiful tree to build around. There's not those things that are differences in the surface of the land that allow you to have things already in place to build around. I'd love to find out if there's a way to do this so that you make win-win.
Sure. Through the chair, thank you, Representative Cisna. I didn't know anything about development and city planning, urban planning, rural planning until I joined the Planning Commission. It was a very, very steep learning curve, and issues like this were always thrown on our plate. I think it's something that's incumbent upon everybody in the areas that they live to become involved in comprehensive planning processes so that values that they might have can be incorporated in that plan, that there are strong plans and strong ordinances in each city that reflects the values of its residents, and that may accomplish some of the things that you're bringing up. I think in terms of this bill, I'm not sure how we integrate that into HB 264, but I think there's a key point here that this deferral on taxation is only 5 years. So it's going to allow somebody to subdivide. They're going to put in the improvements. They're going to meet the requirements of the local subdivision ordinances and develop that land in a short period of time, as opposed to subdividing and letting and having infrastructure stubbed in and maybe a pilot road pushed in, but maybe not meet all the requirements that you would like to see there, and then have it sit fallow for many, many years. I think this will not result in that situation.
Okay. Good. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Sisma. Thank you, Mike, for your testimony.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you. Also online for questions, we have Steve Van Sant, the state assessor, calling from Palmer, and Scott Ruby with the Division of Community and Regional Affairs for the committee members if you have questions. Is there anybody else here today that would like to testify on the bill, HB 264? Bruce, do you want to make a stab at it? Yeah. Come on up. Bruce Griggs from Juneau.
Morning. Bruce Good morning. Griggs from Juneau. I'm a local developer, and I have examples. I've been really involved in this, and it's affected me and my business. I've developed two subdivisions in the last 7 years. One was a residential, and it was a 27-lot subdivision. And it went fairly quickly, so the issue of property taxes wasn't that big of a deal for this one. Then I just 3 years ago finished a commercial subdivision, light commercial. And it didn't. I got hit by the crash. So we're still sitting on some of those lots, and the property was valued at, say, roughly $800,000 when we owned the raw land. As soon as that land was approved and platted, the value increased on the property taxes fourfold in this example. So we were immediately, before you put a road in, before you clear anything, your property taxes increased fourfold. So it went from basically like a $800 a month payment to the city to $3,500 a month. Mm. So that, you know, and we're still carrying a lot of that. We have since sold some of those lots. So that has helped. But after selling those lots, they sold for more than what the assessor thought that they were going to be worth. So then they go up again. So now we're sitting on a few lots, and the taxes are even higher. It's okay, though, because we were able to sell a few lots, and luckily we were able to hold on to that. But now the example that I really like to bring forth to the committee is a subdivision that I have on my desk that I've paid for the engineering. I've paid for the surveying and all these other costs, and it's sitting there in a folder on my desk, ready to go forth in the process to get the permits with the city. I'm afraid to do it, frankly. It's a bigger subdivision, and unfortunately, there's no tool to bring in smaller portions of it. So I have to bring it all in at once. And it's a 75-lot subdivision. The property taxes on it right now are roughly $1,000 a month. As soon as that's platted and brought forth to the city, it's going to go to, and I've been to the assessor and discussed this before, you know, I had a meeting with the assessor because I wanted to know how much is this going to increase. Well, it's going to go to about $6,000 a month. So, and it's going to take at least a year to get the permits, 6 months to a year, and then probably another 6 months to a year to be able to get the lots so they are sellable by putting in the arterial roads and the utilities. So for 2 years, I'm going to be stuck with a $6,000 a month tax bill. So that's my example.
Well, that's a great example. Thank you, Bruce. Are there questions? Oh, all right. Thank you for your testimony. All right. We have another bill up today, and we're going to bring this bill up for committee work in action at our next meeting Thursday and leave it open for public testimony, any testimony that may come in between now and Thursday. But we will plan to take action on it on Thursday. I appreciate all of you coming out today to testify in the bill. Really appreciate your testimony. And at this point, I think we're going to take a brief at ease so we can get the next bill up and ready to go. Thank you very much. We're back online with the Community and Regional Affairs Committee. Representative Tammy Wilson, thank you for joining us. We have HB 312 before us today, and if you'd begin your testimony. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you for the opportunity. For the record, my name is Representative Tammy Wilson. I represent District 11. House Bill 312 is an act creating a low-interest loan program for Alaskans to convert their homes to natural gas-fired heating and creates a natural gas heating conversion loan fund. HB 312 will allow the option for Alaskans to take out a low-interest loan so they can replace their oil, coal, or wood home heating devices. The natural home heating conversion loan program is not subject to income limitations and will be set at 1% interest for 10 years. Natural gas is a cleaner burning fuel than is currently offered in many communities. As many of you may not know, the Fairbanks North Star Borough is what the EPA says now is a non-attainment area for PM 2.5, which is a particulate level. And thus far, the models have shown that it is due to our home heating, whether that is wood, coal, or heating oil, which is currently pretty much our only choice. We do have a small amount of gas and then some district heat within the city of Fairbanks. So why do we need this loan? Part of it is we are going to be required to do what's called a state implementation plan by the EPA, which has to prove that we are taking steps to lower our particulate level. We have already asked our residents to upgrade their wood or coal burners, so there's already been some cost on that. We're also asking them to look at their oil furnaces and, when affordable through the rebate program or through other programs, to upgrade those while we wait for gas to get to Fairbanks, which hopefully will be less than 30 years. But this doesn't kick in until gas is available. And some interesting facts that we were able to learn is, according to the EPA's emission factor data, switching from a conventional wood stove to natural gas will reduce our PM emissions by 99.7%, which is very substantial for us. And switching from oil to gas will reduce it by 38.6%. For us, you know, what we have two things that are really at risk for us. The first one for the state is the transportation funding. If we are not able to get our PM 2.5 down to where it needs to be at 35 parts per billion, and that's assuming the EPA doesn't change that, they can literally take away the transportation funding that the northern region has. But even, you know, a more local issue is, it is about air quality, and we do want to see our air quality getting better. Unfortunately, we just went through a big stint of negative 40 to negative 50 degree temperatures. And so the diversion rate we can't do a whole lot about. They basically say in the EPA that we're polluting ourselves and therefore we need to take care of it versus wildfires. So anything that we can do will help that case. But for us, the ultimate issue is, and that's what brings this bill forward, is we cannot get there without natural gas. We can lower emissions from our wood and our coal, and technology is increasing and making it better, but it can't get us there. Our heating oil, we can change from different types to a low sulfur, which will help it, but probably still can't get us there. It is going to be this. And when you're in a community that you're continuously asking them to upgrade their heating systems, we just feel that this is another tool in our toolbox that will be able to show the EPA a better way than fining our residents for just trying to heat their homes. So I appreciate you hearing our bill and any questions I can answer. We also should hopefully have HFC online. This would go through their programs. They would be the ones monitoring it. Currently, there are no funds here. This would be kicking in only when gas became available to our community.
Okay, and you're correct. We have Stacy Schubert, Carrie Bowling, and John Anderson with AHFC online. Representative Gardner.
Thank you very much. A few years back, the legislature passed a program to help aircraft owners install sort of the next generation of communications. I forget what it was called, but it replaces radar, and it allows them to know where they are in relation to the terrain and to other aircraft. And there was a similar program where there was a fund created that they could borrow from at low interest. Did this, by chance, was this modeled and after that or something similar?
Through the chair, this was really more modeled after the rebate program, just trying to stay within their definitions and how they currently do their program. Mm-hmm. And most people have been taking part of that, but again, if you take part of the rebate program, you're upgrading your oil furnace versus a gas furnace because we currently still don't have gas. But we modeled it pretty closely off that one, so we weren't making new definitions and new programs.
Thank you, Madam Chair, for another question. And do you anticipate having adequate funding to meet the need for homeowners who would want to participate? Or if not, have you considered using income level guidelines so that you can get more people actually to participate, those who can pay for it themselves and those who need the assistance?
Through the chair, interior weatherization is our program for income-based. We feel that a lot of them will still be able to go through that program to hopefully upgrade their heating. This is probably more to the middle class that cannot afford to do the rebate program currently, but yet do not qualify for the interior weatherization. So that middle area is what we're looking at.
Thank you.
With this.
Representative Cisna and then Foster, please.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. Even in Anchorage, we do have, many of us are concerned about the whole energy issue, and we are a natural gas in our house, but same time, in Alaska, we don't really have any certainty about anything. And I'm just wondering about, and I have glanced through your bill, not studied it, probably because I really don't have the background to know well enough. And that is, I know that at least some of the conversations I've listened to, it's possible to use some of the same equipment and convert to things and then convert back to actually have your furnace be able to be run by various propane, natural gas, that kind of thing. And want to know if that kind of double usage is in any way not encouraged by this. Does this say only one way can be taken that way, or is it possible to use the natural gas and then maybe switch back to something else that it was used for before? Is that a possibility, or?
Through the chair, I was looking at my lifeline to see, but at this point, we haven't looked at it that way because for Fairbanks and in that area, oil furnaces or wood stoves couldn't be converted. You would have to be, like, you're correct, if you were going to something like propane and natural gas, you might be able to do that. Those conversions usually aren't quite as expensive as it would be to convert your whole unit out.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, thank you.
Okay. Representative Foster.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a point and then two questions just on that. I know that with cooking stoves, you can buy a propane cooking stove, and it usually comes with just a little part that you flip, and then you can use that for natural gas. And so I don't know how that would apply to heating, but certainly with a propane stove, cooking stove. So my two questions, first of all, you had mentioned that if you convert from wood to gas, that reduces your PM2.5 by 99%, and if you go from oil to gas, that's 38%. Do you have any idea what the composition of those two heating sources are in Fairbanks? Like, are you 50% of the residences use wood and 50% use oil? I'm just trying to get a feel for how much that would reduce your PM2.5 by.
Through the chair, Representative Foster, I do know the answer to that. Uh-huh. Mostly, it's 60 to 65% that's wood and or coal. Okay. Burning wood, burning devices. In fact, that has been probably the number one. Mm-hmm. That the EPA has said is our issue, and that's why we do have a wood change-out mm-hmm. Program. Mm-hmm. Within the city, Fairbanks, it's about 55%, or actually higher than what you would anticipate, and that number is growing every day as our energy costs have also increased.
Okay. Thank you. And then the other question, would this bill just apply to just the change-out of the appliance, or does it also include because you've got to make the connection to the net, to the pipeline, to the street, or wherever the connection might be. Does it include all the way out, or is it just the appliance?
Through Chair Representative Foster, it's just for the appliance. Okay. We looked at both, and it would. Mm-hmm. I guess it's our belief that if we would take care of the big purchase, mm-hmm. that hopefully the homeowner would also have some money into the game and be able to afford the other part.
Thank you.
Yes, and before we take the question, please let the record show that we've been joined by Representative Dick. Thank you for being here. Representative Osterman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A couple of questions. Reference, first off, to commercial. I'm assuming that within the rail belt area, there's a lot of commercial buildings that are currently burning oil or, and so your bill here only addresses the 25% commercial aspects of a home, a person's home. So why don't we, if we're really looking to reduce those emissions, why aren't we looking at commercial buildings as part of the loan program, maybe a separate subsection in here or something?
Through Chair, Representative Osterman, one of the reasons is because literally the modeling has shown us that it's the residential homes that are causing the majority of the issues, mostly because of the wood and or coal that's being burned. We could look to opening that part up. We didn't want to make it too big, you know, at the very beginning to see, you know, how many people would take, you know, part in that. And there are also some commercial programs out there that are available to those businesses. But we are more than willing to look into that.
I had the same note in my questions that you raised. I think it would be more inclusive if we could, you know, have a business inclusion as well.
And we are not opposed to that, Madam Chair.
Follow up. Mm-hmm. My next question deals with basically this bill's written on the rail belt, Fairbanks down, because that's where the natural gas is going to be. And so I understand and I'm fully aware of the emission issues in the Fairbanks area. And don't get me wrong on my question, but my question deals with what happens with Wantana gets built in, or what happens if we can lower the emissions in a community by burning wood pellets instead of oil. This is fairly defined area that we're trying to deal with, and a specific issue you're trying to deal with in the Fairbanks area from my reading of the bill. And have you thought about statewide issues rather than just narrowing it to?
Through the Chair, Representative Osterman, any community could actually use this. The only part you'd have to have is access to the gas, so you could. We are looking at it, our community, more because we have until 2014 to actually have our state implementation plan put together and given to the Alaska DEC that then goes to the EPA. this for us, although we may be looking down the line, and maybe it never comes to our community, this just shows the EPA that we're serious about wanting gas and what gas will do for us. But if the Kenai area, any other areas that currently are burning oil, and they do have gas, this loan program would also be able to be accessed by them. So it's not just the Fairbanks area that could utilize this.
Okay. Just one follow-up, then, and I'll use the electric issue. You know, my community is about 98% alternative energy at the end of next year, and we're going to be, with our rates, going to be in the neighborhood of 14, 15 cents a kilowatt. And so if we want to start converting some of our homes to electricity rather than burning diesel, and maybe it's appropriate that there's some other options in here besides just the natural gas with communities. And I understand where you come from, and I understand mm-hmm. why you're dealing this, why this bill's here. So mm-hmm. don't get me wrong, I'm not trying to, there's no way that I want to disrupt your bill, but on the other hand, I'm thinking more of a holistic view of the state.
Mm-hmm. Through the chair, Representative Osterman, with our high cost of electricity, it probably just never crossed my mind. We're at like 23, 24 cents. So I guess we have thought about that a little bit, again, with Susitna, but for us it's so far out. To look at those kind, I'll just be honest, it just never crossed my mind that somebody would have electricity cheap enough to be able to convert electric-wise versus what we're with now. And so if you're looking at an amendment for that, I'd be very interested in seeing that, because we really are looking for this to be statewide. It's nice that we have the grants from the rebate program from our personal interior weatherization, but, you know, again, we know the state only has so much funding. At the same time, as you're asking people to make some of these major costs, I don't think it's wrong to ask it for a loan versus just give it to them. So, you know, we are looking for this to be able to be done statewide, and we thought about the gas portion, but I just never thought about electricity being cheap enough that it would be worthwhile.
Well, it's an excellent point. I know in Southeast Alaska, the Southeast Integrated Resource Plan is going through its public hearing process, the review process. And one of the things that's talked about a lot in that plan is conversion to wood pellets for home heating in some of our smaller communities. So this, you know, that would be an example of where, you know, it could be more statewide, the focus to include some of those opportunities. Representative Sisna?
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. This bill here is dusting off my memory, and have been to quite a few, it's been a couple of years, but quite a few energy conferences around the state, and a lot of them in rural. And propane has been talked about kind of repeatedly. And if I'm remembering my husband's comments, he was talking about the ability to shift our gas-run furnace to propane quite easily. And if that is the case, and if in rural Alaska they were talking about propane, it's something that you actually can get to people in a barge, and actually it's more portable because it comes in different sizes. So it would be something in emergency that would be, and that's what my husband was thinking of, was having a safety capability of being able to shift it from one to the other. If, in fact, that kind of thing could be done, and this bill actually included those kinds of possibilities, where you're not changing the furnace, it's doing exactly what you're talking about, but you're just changing the options available in a state that is going to need lots of options, I think. Okay. Yeah, thank you.
Okay. Any other questions? Representative Gardner.
Yes, thank you. I have two questions. First of all, does the 1% interest on the loan cover the overhead of establishing and running such a program, or would they ultimately be eating up the capital to do it? And then, okay, and I'll say the question after.
Through the chair, Representative Gardner, that's probably a question that we should let HFC answer, because it would be the ones administering the program, and they would know how much.
Let's take. Shall we ask the question of HFC? Well, we have Stacy.
I have another question for the sponsor and then...
Do you want to do that question first
and
then go
back? Yeah, because it's a quick one.
All right.
I see that on your sponsor statement down at the bottom, there's a little heart. Is that for Valentine's Day? Or did my staff do that?
Through the chair, Reps. I'm Garner.
A little flower. Red.
Yeah, we have a poinsettia because we are Christmas. Thank you.
Okay.
Okay. Representative Gardner has a question for AHFC, and we have Stacy Schubert, Carrie Bowling, and John Anderson online. Representative Gardner, could you restate the question, please?
Yes, I was just curious about the 1% interest rate. Does that cover the overhead, or would the cost of administering this loan program sort of have to go into the corpus of the fund?
Through the chair, this is Stacey Schubert with Alaska Housing Finance Corporation.
Good morning, Stacey.
Representative Gardner, I also have Paul Kapansky and Diane Irwin of our mortgage department who have joined me here in my office. We have submitted an indeterminate fiscal note on this. We do estimate that our cost would be about 1% in order to administer the fund, but of course, it would depend on the demand of the overall program. From startup, but looking over the 10-year loan term.
Thank you.
Are there other questions at this point?
No.
Okay, thank you. Okay, so we have the two issues of the commercial application for small business and then the issue of whether or not we should expand it to include other alternative energy conversion opportunities. First of all, does the committee support requesting changes in those areas, or are we comfortable with the bill the way it is? What is the direction that we want to give to the sponsor in those areas? Yes.
I think we should add a couple of sections in there, one dealing with maybe the electricity side of it and one dealing with those that are totally outside of a grid with electricity or natural gas. And have another sections add in, and not dilute the current natural gas section, but add sections that would apply. Mm-hmm.
That would include other specific alternative energy types, or would it be all inclusive? I mean, to include biomass and other options, or are you looking at just? Did you say propane?
I said electric, and then. Other alternatives.
So it would be inclusive,
yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Are you comfortable with that direction to expand it out and come back with an amendment?
Yeah. Thank you, Madam Chair. So I just want to make sure that I understand it correctly. Instead of trying to name all the different types of energy there might be, to have more of a broad one so that if there was some kind of maybe biofuel that we don't even know of currently that could be offered, this could be expanded to something like that versus trying to come up with electric propane and line, down with that. No, we're absolutely okay with that, and we can come back with that.
Okay. All righty. And then go ahead, Representative Gardner.
I have one other question that is kind of relevant, and I understand that the high cost of fuel that Fairbanks is experiencing has a lot of social costs and a lot of people considering moving and things like that, but what I would like to know when you come back is there's a possible loss of federal highway monies, and I'd be interested in kind of evaluating what the cost of this program would be and the potential loss of financial impact that's direct from federal highway money lost.
Through the chair, Representative Gardner, we can give you the exact amount, what the transportation loss is, but this is really coming forward because of all the restrictions that will come down on our community because we are a non-attainment area. Honestly, if we were not a non-attainment area, this bill probably wouldn't even be coming forward. It is a health issue. Health issue is one of the things that we are mandated by the state to do, and we are being told that that's the reason that the EPA has made these levels. And so, this is a way for our community to show them that we are trying overall as a legislature to help them out because it was not their choice to have this mandate. Yes, we chose to live up in one of the coldest areas, and I wouldn't change it for the world, but I would change how the EPA deals with us. But we will give you the exact amount of the highway funds.
Thank you. And Madam Chair, just so I might explain, I understand that. I'm thinking of arguing down the line when this gets to the Finance Committee to make a stronger case for doing it now.
Through the chair, Reverend Gardner, I appreciate that, and we will get that to you.
Thank you.
Okay. And then on the other point, we have the 25% allowance for commercial. Does the committee want to give any direction to expand that, or are you satisfied with that? That allowance.
For myself, Madam Chair, in the absence of any other kind of testimony about the need and the value, I'm comfortable with what the sponsors.
Okay. Representative Osterman.
And that may be an answer our question to pose to AHFC as well, as to whether the impact or any reason not to.
Okay. Stacy, are you still online with us?
Yes, Ms. Chair, I am.
Could you address the question of application to businesses? The current legislation calls for an allowance of 25%. Would it, in your view, be overly burdensome to implement or costly if it was expanded to be more inclusive of businesses, small businesses?
Madam Chair, I'm looking to Paul Kapansky, who is our Director of Mortgage, for an answer to that question.
This is Paul Kapansky, Director of Mortgage Operations. Right now, under our statutes, we are severely limited to making loans to commercial enterprises. So unless we had a change in our statutes, we could not do it. Now, if that occurred, as far as the administrative cost and the burden, I really don't have an answer at this point, because that would depend upon the need and the demand.
Okay.
Right now, our residential small loan programs, which the residential part of this is administered through a contract to Alaska USA, I am not sure how we would handle the commercial part, because we do not do direct lending per se.
Okay.
I'm not sure if that answers your question, though.
Thank you. Well, perhaps we should leave that section alone and just deal with the other issue of expanding the alternative energy.
And, Madam Chair, we took that definition straight out of the rebate program. That's okay. Where the definition of the 25% came from. I didn't know it was backed by statute, but
okay.
That's where the definition
came from. Are there additional questions or comments on the bill? Representative Foster.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The health impacts certainly are immediate in terms of the particulates impacting folks there. Fiscal impact in terms of the federal highway funds, is that imminent? Is that, are we looking at a year out before they start doing things?
Through the Chair, Representative Foster, the EPA wants us to believe that it's immediate. It is my understanding when 2014 comes, odds are we can't meet that deadline. We can ask for a five-year extension. Mm-hmm. We don't want to get there, because what exactly happens, it's not just the highway funds, but, for instance, let's say the gas line wanted to come through the Fairbanks North Star Borough. At this point, because we're a non-attainment area, they would be required to do a lot more permitting than they would for other communities. They have to show whether or not they would be adding to our particulate level with added trucks, added construction. So those are immediate. The economic impacts are immediate. How they look at our military bases being there and moving more troops, they now, the military has to look and say, is this going to impact us negatively when it comes to it? So those things are immediate. As far as the highway funds, as long as, and I've been working directly with Region 10, EPA through Seattle, that we're working toward the end. They're usually pretty good about it, but sometimes it depends upon who the President of the United States is at the time.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. Well, this is a good bill, and I appreciate your work on it, and we'll have it back when you have the new changes. So you could work with Terry and other members of the committee on those changes, but we appreciate the work.
Thank you, and I will make sure before the amendment comes that you all, that everybody's able to see it so that we get it right the first time.
Great.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Are there other issues to come before the committee today? Okay, hearing none, we are adjourned at 9:25. Thank you.